In some ways, I am ready to go back to the beginning of Romans so we can talk about salvation and about sinners and all that. For some reason, that bothered me, but it doesn't bother me near as much as the 12th chapter of Romans. Why? It's because Paul is writing to the Romans telling him, because of all this happened before, all I wrote before, and here you are today, a saved child of God. In the first couple of verses of the 12th chapter, he tells us that we got to be changed on the inside. We got to change the way we act. And then last week he talked to us about how we should be acting with one another. Well, this morning he is going to talk about how we're to act towards unbelievers, in particular those who are our enemies. Well, isn't that enough for us to love one another? Apparently not. And I'm particularly dreading next Sunday's message. Yes, I said dreading. When he goes in the 13th chapter. And I ain't going to tell you about it. You just read it for yourself and you'll figure out my dilemma here. So he's given us a guideline about how we should act if we're a saved child of God. To ourselves, to other believers, and to this morning he'll be talking about towards unbelievers. And we'll find that in Romans, the 12th chapter, starting in verse 14. Bless the ones who persecute you all, and you all bless and not curse. Well, what does the word bless mean? Now, we say it all the time. When somebody sneezes, we'll say, bless you. We'll say, well, bless your heart. By the way, when a southern lady says, bless your heart, they're calling me an idiot. Just in case you didn't know the lingo. Bless your little heart. What is it talking about? When we say, bless you. Well, the word bless means to speak well of. Therefore, the believer here is charged to do something that could be most difficult. It's to speak well of someone who is doing bad things to you. I must admit that I've not always followed that rule. I'll admit that, and I'm thinking that you probably, in your weaker moments, may have not blessed somebody, spoken well of someone who has done you wrong. Think of the worst thing someone's ever done to you. Did you like that person? Well, you don't have to like them, but it's telling you not to bless them. To speak well of them. And I've already lost a bunch of us today, I'm sure, on that, just that one statement. And there's a whole lot more to go, so hang around. It'll get worse. Speak well to your persecutors, your enemies. Now, most of our enemies today are not enemies who are physically going to attack you, to hurt you physically. Most of our enemies, at least I hope so, most of our enemies will be speak bad of you. They'll do bad things from you. Maybe they've stolen from you. Maybe they've ruined your character or reputation. Maybe they just don't like you and hate you, and they tell everybody in the world how terrible a person you are. Those are your persecutors. The natural inclination would not be to bless them. That wouldn't. What would your natural inclination be? We're to speak well to your persecutors, and we're to speak well about your persecutors. In other words, not only to their face do we speak well or bless them, but we go out amongst the world and other people in our world, we are to talk good about them. Really? This is challenging, guys. This is not something that, you know, oh yeah, God says it, so. No, this is something that's hard. This is something that's against our human nature. We are to pray for our persecutors. Not pray in the immature way that God hurls a giant boulder down upon them. That's not the kind of prayer he's talking about. And the question is, why should we pray for those who do evil against us? What should be our prayer for our enemies? Our number one prayer. Well, you know how to get rid of an enemy? The best way to get rid of an enemy is to make them your friend. That's serious. Now, what is their problem? What is their number one problem in life? Your enemies, your persecutors. They need to know Jesus Christ, don't they? So instead of just praying that they quit persecuting them, you, why don't you try to pray for their salvation? You see, in that way, there could be some that are actually won to the Lord by your response to their persecuting of you. Not every persecutor will be won to Christ. Not everyone who persecutes you and you turn around and bless them and bless their life. But they'll be scratching their heads. But not everyone will be won to Christ. But those who do will have a powerful witness for Christ. You, in doing so, speaking blessing instead of cursing, will have a powerful witness for Christ. And you said you couldn't do anything for Christ. That God didn't give you any gifts. I tell you what, if you can master that gift, if you can use that gift God gave you to turn the other cheek, to bless those who curse you, you can do so much more than what I'm doing here in this pulpit. Yes, in that way, you can be a most powerful witness. Do good to our persecutors. Do good to them. Don't curse. The word here, curse, is not necessarily saying bad words. You can curse somebody. Some of the worst cussing out I've ever heard was somebody who never used a cuss word. Yeah, they knew their adjectives. Stating, and when you, it's the curse in the sense of stating that a supernatural power will cause harm to someone or something cursed. I just wish that person would lead a miserable life. I curse you in the sense that a witch or somebody in mythology would curse you. I want that person to really be punished. I want that person to really be miserable. Sometimes they get so bad you might say, I wish that person would be dead. You're cursing them. Speak well, don't curse. And just about the time that you think we were getting, you know, that's the worst part of it, verses 15 and 16 tells us that we are to live life with them. Listen, what is this? To rejoice with while rejoicing. To weep with while weeping. While thinking the same toward one another, while not thinking the high things, but having associated with the lowly things. Do not become wise in yourself. The believer is to show a genuine interest in the life of an unbeliever. We are not just to segregate ourselves as a clan, as a cult, as a church. Not to segregate ourselves and never have anything to do with unbelievers. Believe it or not, unbelievers are not a whole lot different than you are, the way they live their life. We are to rejoice with them that rejoice. So what it means is that we're to rejoice with our neighbors and friends and acquaintances when something good happens to them. When something good happens to anybody, it's an opportunity to rejoice, but especially with an unbeliever. That's great. We're to join them in the moment of joy. This is not as easy as it sounds on the surface, for it often goes against the grand human nature. That person may not live a good life. May not even be somebody you like. When something good happens to them, sometimes, I can't believe that happened to them and they're that bad. No. Rejoice with them. It's too often it's human nature to envy a person's success, to feel disappointment, to act indifferent. Oh well. It is hard for us to relate to a billionaire who is an atheist, isn't it? It's hard to rejoice when something good happens to them, right? We need to rejoice when our enemies rejoice. When the unbelievers have something good to them. It's a simple fact that maybe it's your neighbor, good as can be, and they have something happen to them. We need to rejoice when they rejoice. The believer needs to feel and act differently, though, than the world. The believer is to conquer our nature. Our nature is, when something happens, somebody is to say, why not me? And they don't even know Christ. I've devoted all my life to Christ, and this good thing happens to them. That's our nature. We are to feel joy over the success of others and to show His joy by congratulating and joining them in their moment of joy. There have been too many Christians who felt like, I've got to separate myself so far from the world that I can't even participate in the basic human natures that God has given us. Joy, happiness, sorrow, grief. We are to weep with them that weep. This, of course, refers to our friends and fellow men who are facing some trial or loss, some moment of suffering. There's a lot of people who've not lived good lives, that made poor decisions in life. I've met a lot of them. I know Terry has also. They made poor decisions. They got what they deserved. You ever said that? And you just really go past the point of caring. We're to weep with these folks. We're living life together. We're journeying this world together. But there's nothing different in their lives. They really didn't, except for Christ. The road that we walk is not different. We have hurts, we have pains, we have all kinds of things that go on in different trials and tribulations in our lives. Some have them worse, some are not as bad. But we suffer through the same things in life. And we're to have compassion and emotions with them. No matter what it causes, the weeping, the Christian believers draw near to the person and feel with them. Empathize with them. The believer is to be of the same mind toward others. Now, don't understand, this is different than believers being of the same mind. This primarily refers to our attitude and behavior towards others and their lot in life. The believer is to strive to get into the very mind of other men and understand them. We are not to put people in categories. Rich, poor, black, white, pretty, ugly, and in some people's cases, pretty ugly. You know? We're not to put people in categories. I can't feel for this person because they're in this category. I can't feel for this person because they're in this category. No, we are to have the same mind towards one another, with not one person or one group of people better than the others. Just think of the enormous impact that such love and empathy would have upon the world in bringing peace and unity and in meeting the desperate needs of so many people. If we were to just be of the same mind. But no, he goes on. The believer is not to mind high things, but to condescend to men of low estate. High things refers to seeking the things of preeminence, honor, prestige, recognition. The believer is not to be snobbish, not to allow his mind to roam around in the high things of the world. Do you know some people who are just so smart they have no idea what's going on in the world? They're just so smart, they have not a lick of common sense. They don't know how this world even works. And I'll take my shot. We have a lot in government just like that. Probably won't be able to say it next week, but I'll say it now. But they think on the high things. Do you realize as Christians, we can be thinking on the high things of God and never realize and get down on the level of people who know nothing about God? And sometimes we'll sit there and go, they're just ignorant. They don't know God. And here we are, we worship Him, we're special, we're His children. Now, I know we don't say those things, do we? But sometimes we act like it. There are churches today who would not allow certain people into their auditorium. They just wouldn't. Might contaminate us. The problem is we're already contaminated. We're already sinners. We're just saved by the grace of God. The believer is not to be wise in his own conceits. He's not to have too high an opinion of himself, although he is above, as though he's above and better than the lowly. We are not better than anybody else simply because we're children of God. And so our ministry has to be to those of high estate, those of low estate, to all men and all people. You know what? The pride of intellect or fancy superiority is probably the worst pride there is. It's more insidious, more injurious than any other pride because it leads to contempt of the opinions of others and an extreme reliance on self. We can start liking ourselves a little too much, thinking that we're a little better than everybody else if not careful. And when we're dealing with unbelievers, we got to meet them where they're at. We got to meet them where they're at. In verses 17 through 19, while giving back, no one evil for evil, while providing good things before all men, if it is possible, as much as from you, while being at peace with all men. We need to be at peace with men. While the believer is to live above reproach in the sight of men. Two behaviors here are particularly mentioned. The believer is not to react. He is not to return evil for evil. It's a simple phrase we told our kids, two wrongs don't make a right. It's really that simple. You see, reaction to someone who does something bad to you will likely lose the friendship of that person and lose all hope of reaching that person for Jesus Christ. Reaction is not the way of God and or of Christ. The believer is to demonstrate good behavior in the sight of all men. The word provide here actually means to think before acting. We all do that, right? We all think before we act. I hope so. I hope we've become mature enough that we Don't just jump up, fly off the handle and say the first thing that comes in. Just, guys, if the world thought, said the first thing that came out of their minds, we would all be fighting each other, wouldn't we? We're to just demonstrate good behavior. We are to think and pray through His behavior towards us and how we are going to respond to that person. Why? So that we can respond in the right way and in the proper way. In essence, the believer is to love by turning the other cheek to evildoer in the sight of all men. This is a strong testimony of God's love, and it'll be seen by men who need to see it. That's not easy, guys. It's easy to say. Now, you say, well, what about someone who's beaten me up? We'll get to that. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words doesn't have to hurt me. The believer is to be at peace with all men. However, peace is not always possible. You realize that? Actually, to have peace, you need two participants. If someone is whooping up on you pretty bad, and you want to call a truce, I just want peace, and they just keep whooping on you, you don't have peace, by the way. We've been at war with terrorism for 20 years, more. They were in a war. They were at war with us, and we never even knew it. You know, we were saying peace, and they just continued on. We're to live at peace with all men, but peace is not always possible. Remember, he says, if it is possible, the believer is to live at peace with all men. However, it is not always possible. Some people are troublemakers. Everybody's sitting here. I know what everybody's doing right now. You think about that person who's that troublemaker in your life. I know what you're thinking. And you got that person who, you know, you tried everything in the world, but that person continues to bother you and mess up your life. You can't have peace with that person. Some people have no interest in living at peace with the believer. They have no interest at all. That's not in their program. But as much as possible, the believer is to live at peace with all men. So you're to work at it as much as possible for that peace. And then there's a point where you need to separate yourself from that person. Okay? The definition of insanity applies at this point. The idea of doing the same thing over and over and over again and getting the same results, that's insanity. And so God didn't create us insane. Well, He may be some of us. But He did not create us. He created us with the right mind, with a logical, sound thinking mind that we can sort this out. If I stick my hand here and somebody hits it, I stick it again, somebody hits it, you know what the next thing I need to do? Is not stick my hand there. Makes sense. We also need to make sure that the cause of conflict does not arise from the believer. So what is it that determines whether a believer is to turn the other cheek or defend ourselves? It's a good question, isn't it? By the way, if someone's whooping up on me, you're trying to, the peace thing's only going to last for a little bit. God gave us the desire and the nature to defend ourselves, and there's a good reason for it. And he doesn't say that the bully has to pick on you. The governing principle of the believer is clear. Be not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good. We'll see that in a few minutes. There are times when an attacker, if allowed to continue in his attack, is encouraged in his evil behavior of indulgence and license. And that could be physical, and it could be verbal, and it could be actions against you. There's a time that you're actually condoning what they're doing. You're encouraging what they're doing. Thus, a believer is not to sacrifice truth in order to preserve peace. You catch that? You're not to sacrifice truth just to preserve peace. Evil is not allowed to overcome truth. Period. There comes a point in time when you have to make the stand. With love. And you have to tell that person the truth. So that you can preserve that truth. It's a muddy ground. There's no written laws, written rules, except for the fact that, because everybody's situation is going to be different. But your number one goal is not just to preserve peace, but to win someone to the Lord. Can you do that with a good, quick hit to the cheekbone with your fist? Believe it or not, you can. It's possible. Sometimes it has to happen that way. But the idea here is not what we do, but the attitude in which we do it. Are we showing God in our actions? Now, there are times when someone will do something to you that you want to do something bad back to them. We call that revenge. Vengeance. Let's look in verse 21. Or 20 and 21. While not avenging yourselves, beloved, but give a place to wrath, it's been written and continues to be written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, the Lord is saying. Vengeance belongs to God. If you're a believer of Jesus Christ here today, I don't have to worry about punishing anybody for the things that people do to me. You know, when I was a kid, my parents protected me. They kept me away. You know, when something was harmful for me, they kept me away from it. If an adult came and was going to, now they'd never happen, but if an adult came and started hitting on me or, you know, trying to take me away, guess what my parents would do? They'd step in and be my advocate. They would take care of me. Vengeance would not be mine. It would be my dad, right? That's who had the... Now, vengeance belongs to God, not to man. No man has the right to judge others, not in a private judgment, nor in a personal vengeance. We are not the judge, we are not the jury, and we're certainly not the executioner here. But God is. The right to judge and to execute vengeance is God's and God's alone. So if you're making all these plans to get it back at somebody who messed with you, think again. What if it's a misunderstanding? Maybe what you think they're thinking is not what they're really thinking. Maybe they're not as, quote, evil-minded as you think they are. God knows what the proper punishment would be. Let's go to verse 20 and 21. To the contrary, if your enemy may be starving, be feeding him. If he may be thirsting, give him a drink. For while doing, you'll heap up coals of fire on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but be overcoming the evil by the good. You need to treat an enemy with kindness. Kill them with kindness. It'll affect them greatly. Kindness will cause shame and cause anguish for an enemy. Can you? One of the things that I've gotten to arguments before with people, and it, you know, sometimes online especially. But you get in arguments with people and it gets a little heated and they start, you know, it invariably gets to a point where they're unreasonable and they get angry and stuff. They'll start personally attacking you if that happens. And typically when it gets to that point, I'll just stop and I'll say, I'm praying for you. The conversation, the discussion, the argument just stops. Or you'll say, I love you. And it just stops. You know why? Because they can't understand it. I should be cussing back at them. I should be laying it on. But you know what happens when you do that? When you lay it back on, it just gives them free rein to come back at again. But if you stop and you say, I'm going to pray for you, I love you, all of a sudden, well, that's not, for one thing, that's not a normal response. Okay? And they know that. And they may still go on, but when they get in that quiet time when they're laying in bed at night, it gives God an opportunity to work on their heart. And I believe it does. Just that one phrase. And they realize they're dealing with something that's not, it's not normal. Because they want you to love them. In some way, they want you to love them. In some way, they want you to pray for them. Now, kindness will store up wrath against the evildoer in the day of judgment. They'll have their opportunities. And you've given them to them. You have laid out the offer of peace and they've rejected it. You can't do any more. And vengeance makes evil victorious. Two wrongs do not make a right. We're talking about God's will. Heaping judgment upon somebody, you know, praying for that. No, that's not, no. God will heap judgment upon him at some point. But it'll be his decision and his time. And he'll never use us to do something evil to get back at somebody else. He does not work that way. That's not his character. If the believer takes vengeance, then he allows evil to conquer him. And this he must never do. The believer is to conquer evil, never to allow evil to conquer us. We've had some terrible witnesses for God over the years. As much as I despise abortion and the people who run those places, you cannot say that you bombed an abortion center in God's name. He had nothing to do with it. You cannot kill someone saying they were evil and it was justified by God. No, you cannot. Because God would never lead you to kill someone, murder someone who is just simply evil. God will never, and simply because He wants to answer your prayers, you believe God's going to answer your prayers, that He makes it all right for you to go rob a bank. Okay? You see how silly it can get? Vengeance makes evil victorious. Because of all the evil that has been done in God's name, people now look at God from an evil standpoint. You see, we got to know how He conquers evil. You want to know how to conquer evil? Do good. He overcomes evil by doing what He should do, in particular by doing good towards those who mistreat and abuse us. That is what we should be doing if we're going to fight evil in this world. Do you get where He's going with this? You can't do good. You can't do evil in God's name. You cannot fight fire with fire. If we're going to live our lives and we're going to be a witness to unbelievers, we're going to have to bless them. We're going to have to live life with them. You know, we're going to have to be at peace with them. And we're going to have to kill them with kindness. The reputation of Christianity, of God, is at stake. The reputation of our church is at stake. But your character and your witness is at stake if you return fire with fire. This message this morning is for those who believe in Jesus Christ and accepted Him as their Savior. How many people have been turned away from a group of believers such as us because of the evil done to those unbelievers from God's children? How many unbelievers today can come to know Jesus Christ as their Savior by the example of returning evil for good? A little honey. I'm using all the metaphors today. A little honey. What does it do? I've forgotten. I don't know. I'm sorry? Yeah. Well, I know that, but a little honey goes a long ways with people. And we need to deal with people as if their lives depended on them. Because it does. Unbelievers' lives depend on them. Their lives with Christ. Go past what they're doing to you, but go to the point where you realize what they really need in life. And you have the answer. They need Jesus Christ. And you have that answer for them. It'll change the way you deal with life. But if you're here today and you've never accepted Jesus Christ, well, this is obviously the time that you need to do that. There's so many folks probably beyond that camera right now that's maybe watching. There's so many folks who know the gospel, but they've been hurt by those believers because they've done bad things to them. We need to treat believers, unbelievers, very, very well with the idea of leading them to the Lord. As we stand and prepare for an invitation, I don't know your heart and I don't know what God's leading you to do. If you're here today, beyond that camera, and you're not saved, I believe even though we haven't talked much about salvation, I believe the Lord will use the message to pull you towards Him in salvation. And if you're here today and you're a saved child of God, and you look upon how you're treating your enemies, how you're treating unbelievers, may God press upon your heart to change, to have to transform your mind to a heart of looking at unbelievers as potential sons and children of God. So as we sing, may God move your heart to where